multiple paths a while back. I lost both my parents to different diseases, one being cancer and one being heart disease or a heart attack, basically. So from that point on, I kind of had like an inclination of, is this genetic or is this something going on in our environment? So my sister and I both went on a path of just really diving into what are we putting in our bodies? Could these things really be affecting us? So long story short, I got passionate about a low carbohydrate diet because I love what she just said about listening to your body. So I'm not here to tell you that a low carbohydrate diet or a ketogenic diet is for everybody in this room. That's not what I'm here for. I'm here for to show you possibly a tool that may work for you in your path in nutrition and fitness and wellness. So I really like what they say there in the opening statement for Natural Grocers. That's really, really cool. So to get started, why do it, who's it for, and how to do it? That's what this is gonna basically touch on. So the first thing is, why do we need another direction? We have a problem in our country, okay? So to make it clear, I am not an evolutionist, but this picture made me laugh whenever I saw it because we have been trending in a direction as a country, and they call this a SAD diet, and it truly is a standard American diet. And what is it comprised of? Well, we have a nice graph here, and we know that could go a lot of different ways. However, the standard American diet is what it is. We see people, our loved ones, the people we care about, our friends, and you know them when they eat. When they eat fast food, when they eat what we all know is junk. Let's just keep it real. We know it's junk. We know what the standard American diet is. So I'm not going to go crazy into detail about that. The SAD diet link up there, if you click on that, it's going to give you some numbers about how our sugar consumption has rose in the last 30 years dramatically, like from 30 to 50 grams of sugar a day to over 160 grams of sugar a day. So if you break that down, 160 grams divided by 4 is how many teaspoons of sugar that is. That's 40 teaspoons the average American gets a day. 40 teaspoons of sugar. Dump that out on the table out here and look at that. 40 teaspoons of sugar. So pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes rising every single year, and we're paying for it. How many in here, show of hands, has seen our healthcare costs go up in your lifetime? They keep going up every year. They keep going up. So that is because of a lot of factors, but some of the primary factors is because diabetes, pre-diabetes, type 2, obesity, metabolic disease, these things are running rampant from the standard American diet. And there's a lot of science to back this up. That link right there, if you click on that, it's gonna give you some information just on pre-diabetes and type 2 diabetes since 2012. It's ridiculous how much it's went up just since 2012. So the percentages are staggering in that article there. Now, carbohydrates are not the enemy, okay? There's a link that says here, all right? So carbohydrates are not an enemy. I'm not here to bash carbohydrates, right? They are part of a well-balanced diet. I eat carbohydrates every day, even with a ketogenic diet. They are a part of a well-balanced diet. So, but they are the only non-essential nutrient, okay? So we have to have fat and we have to have protein, but they've proven, this article right here, and by the Clinical Journal of Science, that we don't have to have carbohydrates to live, but we have to have fat and we have to have protein. Gotta have it, hands down. All right, so that pretty much touches on that. Who is low carb for? And I'm gonna touch on this a little bit more in the slides to come. So this is why I love this diet right here. Stable energy and mental focus. I have less cravings for sweets or food, period. Hormone regulation, primarily the hormone insulin. We're gonna talk about insulin. We're gonna talk about leptin. We're gonna talk about ghrelin. I'm gonna get into a little bit of that and give you some science behind that. Now, the other thing is lower inflammation. So, talking to somebody earlier that's dealing with fibromyalgia, okay? there's people that are dealing with joint pain, knee pain, shoulder pain. All these things have improved in my life since I adopted a low-carb diet. Again, I'm here to show you guys a tool that's worked for me, okay? Now, emotional stability. This is a big one. My mood is so constant on a low-carbohydrate diet. And I think the primary, the reason why is blood sugar stability. If my blood sugar is stable, and we're going to talk a lot about blood glucose, my blood sugar is stable, then my body does not send me the signals of anxiety, wondering when my blood sugar is going to drop and when I'm going to have to elevate it with more blood glucose. Okay, so this actually plays a role in emotional stability, our anxiety. There's a lot of different things in that, so we're going to touch on those. Body composition, you notice I put that very last because that's the least important to me here. I would rather see everybody here feel good, perform better, have emotional stability, mental focus, hormone regulation, all these other things before I would rather see them lose weight. Because that is, to me, that is the last thing on the list. But guess what? It is a benefit of this diet. It's just a no-brainer. So what is ketosis? I'm going to touch on this really fast. Because for those of you who are here that maybe know what a low-carb diet is, maybe you want to know more about what ketosis is. So ketosis, it says right up here, ketosis is a normal process for our metabolic health. When the body does not have enough glucose for energy, it burns stored fats instead. This results of a buildup of acids, they're fatty acids called ketones within the body. So basically, and this is where I'm going to touch on insulin a little bit, when you lower your blood glucose by not taking in a bunch of glucose, okay, your insulin starts to drop. Because guess what? Blood glucose is actually toxic to the bloodstream. We have to have insulin to lower blood glucose to make sure that blood glucose doesn't get too high in our bloodstream. That's why diabetics develop problems, because their blood sugar is too high. So if we're dealing with a blood sugar problem here, then we have to also work on our blood sugar to find the solution. So as a result, what happens is the body gets these signals. Whoa, our blood sugar's low. I have to upregulate a fuel source because my blood sugar has dropped to a certain level. So to upregulate, guess what it does? So real quick, a good analogy for this is a refrigerator, okay? If I were to set this refrigerator here and I'm constantly putting my leftovers in this refrigerator, everything that I'm not eating, I'm putting it in this refrigerator, okay? I'm gonna eat this later. Now, if I never tap in to this fuel source, ketones or these fatty acids, because my blood sugar stays too high, I'm never eating the leftovers in my fridge. That's my body fat, okay? So it's really simple. If I let my blood sugar come down, and that may be kind of hard at first. This is like a muscle. You have to train this to happen before it's comfortable. You can't go zero carb after eating a standard American diet right off the bat. Feel like $1 million. It's just not going to happen. This is a kind of like a withdrawal, all right? So by limiting our carbohydrates, we start to limit our blood glucose, which in turn, the body will upregulate ketones. Ketones are made from fat and can be used directly by the brain, the muscle tissue, the organs, everything. This is like a fourth macronutrient. We have fat, we have proteins, we have carbohydrates. All of a sudden, we have ketones. And ketones are actually our brain and our muscles. They don't need insulin to take these in and use them as fuel. So they can cross the blood-brain barrier like that and be used as energy. So that's another interesting point about ketones. Now, how this works. The body stores glucose in the form of glycogen. So imagine these little storage in our cells, these little storage molecules, okay? These are called glycogen. We have them in our muscles. We have them in our liver. We store about 300 to 400 grams of glucose. That's grams of carbohydrate. We store that in our muscle. We store about anywhere from 50 to 100, depending on how big you are, in your liver. So the important part about this process is before your body will upregulate ketones,
you have to let that blood glucose drop, which also starts letting your body convert the glycogen that's in your liver into glucose. And once you use that, that's when the body upregulates ketones and you start feeling like a million bucks. So I know I get way in the weeds here with that, and it's kind of really nerdy, but I just had to kind of throw that out there for those that are here to really hear about ketosis. So generally, one can achieve nutritional ketosis by restricting carbohydrates to 25 to 75 grams of vegetable carbohydrates, okay? So for one of my CrossFit athletes, they can probably go to 75 grams of vegetable carbohydrates and still be in nutritional ketosis. Someone who's very insulin resistant, or maybe pre-diabetic, or really has just struggled with a sugar addiction, may have to restrict as low as 25 grams of carbohydrates to get into nutritional ketosis. So again, that's what intermittent fasting also helps, lower insulin, because guess what? You're gonna start burning this liver glycogen and this glycogen that you have before your body will upregulate the ketones. So if you force it to do that by intermittent fasting and things like that, it's just gonna speed the process up a little more. All right, so this is why I love what she said when she opened up. Listen to your body. You might have high insulin. Now, if you wanna see, there's 12 symptoms of whether you might have high insulin. If you click on that blue thing that says you might have high insulin, it'll take you to a webpage where there's 12 signs that you might have this, okay? The most biggest one for me was, do I want to take a nap in the mid-afternoon? So I used to eat lunch, and by 1 or 2 o'clock, I would get this overwhelming feeling of lethargy. And it was like, I either had to take a nap or I had to drink a cup of coffee or something and it, to function. It was really, really horrible. And I was like, I'm eating healthy. I'm having my oatmeal in the morning. I'm having my apple. I'm having, a little bit of fat, and it's like, I don't understand why this is happening. And it would just frustrate me to no end. So that was one of the symptoms I had. Now, the other one is, would I get hangry if I didn't eat every 2 or 3 hours? And my wife and my sister can vouch for this, that I had periods of hanger. And I know everybody in here has experienced that, where they have to eat or they're going to annihilate someone in front of them. It's just, and that's a horrible place to be. It is. It's like, when we were in a more primitive state, you can't tell me that there were times that, that you were so hangry that you couldn't focus, you could not function. And that's because we've lost the ability to be metabolically flexible. And I've been trying to learn a lot about this, because we should be able to use fats, proteins, carbohydrates, ketones. We should be able to use all these interchangeably. That's what they're there for. That's what these macronutrients are there for. So I'm not demonizing carbs. Have we overused them? Yes. So if somebody were to slap my carbohydrate card down the table and I'm taking your carbohydrate card away from you. Okay, well, I've abused that carbohydrate card. I have. So yeah, take it away from me. I've lost my ability to, that's kind of what insulin resistance is you've lost the ability to process carbohydrates correctly, and it's actually metabolically damaging you. So if you have any of these 12 symptoms, you might look into this diet. This may be a tool. It helped me, it may help you. I'm not here to say this is for everyone. Okay, so let's talk a little bit about insulin ghrelin. Ghrelin is like, think of growling. Growling is when your stomach's growling. That's ghrelin. Your body has told you it needs sustenance. It needs food, okay? So when that hormone is high, that's when you are really, really hungry, all right? Now, it says, it's called like the hunger hormone, okay? We eat, let's say we have a nice big meal and have all kinds of stuff, pie and this, that, and the other, right? So what happens is you get a huge insulin dump, because that glucose, like we talked about, can be a little toxic to the blood. That's why diabetics develop problems. So when you have this huge insulin dump, it strips all the blood sugar out of your body. So suddenly, an hour, 2 hours after your meal, everybody show of hands, who's had that Thanksgiving meal and wanted to take a nap after the Thanksgiving meal? That's because of the cranberry sauce, the biscuits, the rolls, The sweet potato casserole, all these, I mean, you just dumped a bunch of carbs into one plate and stirred it around and ate it. So the thing here is that the insulin rises, that suppresses, the ghrelin's not there, right? So then once the blood sugar falls, the ghrelin comes back. So the ghrelin comes back and it comes back even stronger. Now, part of the issue here is not enough healthy fats and too much carbohydrates. So if we balance this out a little bit better with healthy fats and not so much carbohydrates, then we can suppress ghrelin faster and longer with leptin. So leptin is ghrelin's enemy. When ghrelin is high, leptin's low, and when you have enough fat in your diet, guess what happens? They flip-flop. Leptin gets high and ghrelin gets low. Okay, so suddenly you can go 3, 4, 5 hours in between meals because your leptin is not, it's suppressing the ghrelin and it's not telling you you have to eat every 2 hours. So that comes from enough healthy fats, okay? The other thing that starts to happen is the insulin levels drop. And when the insulin levels drop, that process we just explained where the body says, okay, we need to mobilize a fuel that's readily available. So what does it go after? It goes after our leftovers in our refrigerator. It goes after our stored adipose tissue. So again, I know I'm getting a little bit in the weeds with science, but this is important. Not many people understand that, like, this is an insulin, blood sugar, leptin, ghrelin problem. And if you eat too much carbohydrates and not enough healthy fats, these things get out of balance. And suddenly we have to eat 2 or 3 hours constantly to maintain a steady state, okay? So, anything more I wanna touch on that? Oh, lowering insulin. Up here at the top is some of the symptoms. A lot of acne can be too high of insulin. A lot of just belly fat, okay? So not like I'm developing fat all over, but a lot of just belly fat is a huge sign of too high of insulin. Another thing is skin tags. If you don't know what those are, Google it. That's another sign of insulin. If you've ever had anybody that's dealing with fatty liver, guaranteed insulin resistance. If you have fatty liver, you have some type of insulin resistance going on. Another thing is energy crashes after eating. We talked about that. The lunchtime, you eat, 2 o'clock, you're ready to pass out. You wanna take a nap, okay? That's a huge sign that there's something off in this balance of ghrelin and leptin and insulin, is if you eat and then you have to take a nap 2 hours later or you're just really lethargic. So let's go on to the next one. Foods that minimize insulin. The lowest on the totem pole is fats. Fats are lowest in insulin stimulating foods. There's a science article that goes with that if you click on the blue link. They also will help in ketone production because these fats, just like we produce ketones from the fat we have on our body, the fats that we take in also produce ketones, okay? So, examples here that I really, really love and use daily is obviously coconut oil, MCT oil, avocados, real butter, bacon, olive oil, lard, ghee, nuts, egg yolks. Man, this is all the good stuff, right? This is all the stuff that they've been told not to eat for 20 or 30 years because we are going to get heart disease. However, they are the key to satiety, and that's that ghrelin-leptin thing. Okay, so when the leptin goes high and the ghrelin goes low and we're satiated, we can go 4, 5, 6 hours in between meals. I'll be honest with you. I fast every day for 18 hours. I just am not hungry until noon. I eat at 6 or 7 at night, and I'm just not hungry until noon. Does that make me special? No, and that may be not for you. But my point is that when you have this regulated out and you find what works for you, because we are all different genetically, we all process macronutrients in different ways, then these things are not uncommon with a high-fat, low-carb diet. Is this key to satiety, all right? So proteins. Now, proteins in moderation. One thing, let's get straight, is a low carbohydrate, moderate protein, high fat diet is not this bodybuilding diet of we take in 200-300 grams of protein a day. Because what happens to that excess protein? Anybody know? How does it store it? It stores the fat. You know the process it goes through? It's called gluconeogenesis. Gluconeogenesis. So at first, this protein, this amino acid, gets used in the body. We process it down. It enters the bloodstream. When your muscles, your cells, your organs, everything is full, okay, can't take in any more amino acids, then what happens? That stuff has to go somewhere. And I know it's vulgar. We just don't crap it out. We just don't. So it has to go somewhere. What happens is the body has this process called gluconeogenesis where it converts the excess amino acids back into carbohydrates. So, this was actually a pretty safety mechanism for when there was like the Inuits and people like that that didn't have vegetables and fruits because they lived so far north. They could eat a ton of meat and then it would be converted into the carbohydrates. The excess that, so it's basically, that's the process of gluconeogenesis. If you want to know more about that process, talk to me. I'll be glad to explain it to you. And you can Google that as well. Carbohydrates, sugar in its many forms. So there's a list right there, if you click on that, of all the different names for sugar. Know what these names are because, and it's not just for a low carb diet. We should know what these names are because the industry has put it out there because they're trying to hide the word sugar because they know that there's a lot of health conscious people like us that are looking out for it. So they put a lot of different names on this. There's a lot of references to those names. And you can study these, know how to read nutrition labels. That stuff is so important if you're really, really trying to optimize your situation. So the adaptation phase. All right. This is not the funnest period of the diet, okay? And I'm going to teach you guys my little tools and tricks that I've learned that can help with making this transition a little easier. Because if you have 20 or 25 years of some really solid carbohydrate use, a lot of sugar, some sugar addictions, I mean, things like that, this is going to come harder for somebody who's like, oh, I'm going from paleo to keto or paleo to low carb, you know. So the first thing is, remember, you're changing your fuel source from years of glucose use, okay? So the human body is good at adapting, but this can take time. We were created to adapt. That's one of the awesomest things about our body, is it is an adaption machine. No matter what environment we go to, it is trying to adapt. Whether we're in a hot environment, our body know how to adapt to a cool environment. When we're in a cool environment, our body knows how to adapt to a cool environment. So the same thing goes with our foods. I want you guys to look at this again like a muscle. If you train your body to burn fat, what does your body burn? Somebody yell it out. Fat. So it's just like anything else. If I train my body to burn glucose for the last 20 years, 25 years, my body is trained and adapted to burn a lot of glucose. So coming off of that and transitioning into eating a lot of fat, which will help me burn fat because it has to mobilize fat, whether it's from my body or whether it's from the food. So why would I want to put myself in a position to burn glucose, so when it's not around, I go into freak out mode. And then you know what the body does actually when it goes into freak out mode? It starts burning its own muscle. When you're a carbohydrate burner, a carbohydrate user, a burner, like that's what your main fuel source is, your body goes after your muscle tissue because guess what that process is called? Gluconeogenesis. It's the same exact process we just talked about with the excess protein. So your body knows how to convert protein into glucose. Simple, that's what gluconeogenesis is. So it does it whether you're eating too much protein or whether you're not eating enough carbohydrate and you're a sugar burner. It goes after the muscle, converts it into glucose, and that raises your blood sugar back up, okay? Any questions on any of this stuff, write it down, ask me. I'm gonna try to save a little bit of time for just that. So some of the symptoms that go along with this. Flu-like symptoms are usually a form of like glucose withdrawal. They also can be what we're going to talk about more as mineral deficiencies and also dehydration. So leg cramps is another one. This usually happens when you adopt a low carbohydrate diet and you don't have enough magnesium. If you guys, even if you don't adopt this diet, if you can take away one big thing from a supplement standpoint, is magnesium every single night. Like 80% of Americans right now are deficient in magnesium. And if you're dealing with leg cramps, so check this out. My dad dealt with leg cramps for my entire childhood life until I was 18 years old. He passed away. My dad dealt with leg cramps. And I feel horrible because if I would have known what I know now, I could have put him on some magnesium and saved him a lot of sleepless nights, because he had so many sleepless nights of leg cramps, all because he just didn't have enough magnesium. And you know why? Because we don't get enough magnesium in a standard American diet. It comes from our plant foods, it comes from our kale and our spinach, and you know, all these really good vegetables that frankly the standard American diet just doesn't provide for us. All right, so the next one is constipation. That happens because the body dumps fluid when it dumps glycogen. So when we start burning our body's glycogen, the body actually, the glycogen is held into the cell by water. So when you burn that glycogen, the water that glycogen is held in the cell by has to go somewhere, and so it dumps it. So when it dumps it, it pulls our minerals with it. So that's why we develop mineral deficiencies. But the other reason, we dump all the water and that gets us dehydrated, and then we develop constipation issues like that. So headaches is another one that's also dehydration and sodium, because the same process is happening. The body is burning glycogen. It pulls, as the glycogen is burned, it pulls the water out of our body. Because you'll notice when you implement this diet, you will start urinating a lot, frequently. Who in here has experienced that? Okay, so low carbohydrate diet, that's what's happening. You know why. So we gotta up our sodium. We gotta up our water. Speaking of water, like dying. Heart palpitations is another one that's usually sodium deficiency. And that's because sodium is also another mineral that we will die without. In fact, I think, and quote me if I'm wrong, but we will die faster without sodium than we will anything else. And that is because sodium regulates our blood circulation. So without enough sodium, we start getting lightheadedness, like that talks about right there at the bottom, because we're not getting enough circulation. So all of a sudden you stand up, whoa, I'm lightheaded. That's a sodium problem. So even if you're dealing with that already and without a low carbohydrate diet. So the last one, lightheadedness, I just covered. So the main point I want you to take away from the keto flu and this poor bear here is the fact that we need lots of sodium, lots of water, and magnesium before bed on a low carbohydrate diet. Okay, I like magnesium glycinate. I think magnesium citrate is also a good one as well. But both of those will work for what we're after on a low carbohydrate diet, leg cramps, things like that. Sodium, really simple. I start my day every day with a pile of sodium, whether I'm doing low carb or not, or whether I'm doing paleo, it doesn't matter, every day. You know why? Because they've proven that, and through studies, I think it was done, I can't remember what college it was done at, but I got it from the Bulletproof guys, and they talk about how sodium at the start of our day, the first thing it does is lower cortisol. Because we want cortisol to get us up out of bed. Okay, that gets us up in the morning, gets us moving and grooving. However, you want that cortisol to come down throughout the day. Because you know what is the opposite of cortisol? Is melatonin. And we want our melatonin to come up, because that's what's going to help us sleep and be calm before bed. And what helps with that melatonin is also the magnesium. So you can see how these work together. Again, we're trying to find balance. We want to get up in the day, and we want that cortisol to taper down so our melatonin rises, and we sleep better, we recover better. All these things happen
more balance.
All right? Sodium, water, magnesium. They will help you with this keto fluid thing, okay? So I'm gonna, any questions, write them down, we'll come back to that. So meal ideas, I put a list of meal ideas here. You can go, shameless plug, Muscles and Veggies on Instagram. I post meals almost every day. And there's a ton of meals you can get on there and just look at, get ideas for. That's at Instagram, at Muscles and Veggies. I think if you just click on that, it probably just takes you straight there on your phone. The other one is my Facebook page, which I also post, you know, like my coconut ice cream recipe. I mean, just all kinds of little stuff that people don't think you can eat really, really tasty and good on a low carbohydrate diet. There is so much information on the internet that we can utilize places like this to construct some really fabulous low sugar, low carbohydrate foods that won't raise our insulin, that keep our ketones high, keep us feeling really good, and keep us in that fat burning state, all right? Snacks, really important, because I'm not much of a snacker, but I like to have these things on hand for the times that I do want a snack, because a lot of them keep really well, and I keep in my backpack, like macadamia nuts, Brazil nuts, Peely nuts, nut butter packets like they sell back here, the toasted coconut flakes. If you guys have not tried toasted coconut flakes, these things are like little baked chips that you can put salt on, and they are amazing. They have huge bags of them back here. Oh yeah, pork rinds. Yeah, pork rinds too. But these toasted coconut flakes, super easy. Throw a big pile on a pan, 350 in the oven for 15 minutes. That's it. Pull them out, salt them, they're amazing. They are my popcorn if I do happen to have a hankering for some popcorn. So, dark chocolate, fried avocados. There's so much good stuff in this diet because it's satiating, it's tasty. And you know, coconut butter, almond butter, MCT oil. You know, there's just so much good satiating food in this diet. And a lot of people think, I get bored of this or that. I don't know, maybe call me a freak, but I just do not get bored of this food. I really, really don't. So that's give you some ideas. I just wanted to touch on that very briefly because there's a lot of ways, especially on the internet, that you can get out and research different meals and different foods and get ideas for that. So the difference between low carb and ketogenic, and the ketogenic is a very high percentage of fat and a very moderate percentage of protein and a very low percentage of carbohydrate. So that's to get into nutritional ketosis. So there is a lot of links I put right here, okay, in the ketogenic spot. You know, to click on one of these, so, cancer. Let's talk about cancer real quick. If you click on that one, it's going to take you to PubMed. PubMed is the national database of scientists, journals that our doctors look at for information. If you don't know what PubMed is, start reading PubMed, because that's where these clinical studies get produced, that we get to see what the doctors and clinicians and people like that should be reading, but they're not. Let me rephrase that. That's a blanket statement. I shouldn't do that. Some of them are reading, and some of them are not. So this is a beautiful article on ketogenic diets and how they interact with cancer cells and how they starve cancer cells. Anybody just blurt it out. What feeds bacteria or cancer in a cell?
Sugar.
Sugar. So if sugar feeds this bacteria or this cancer cell, what should we not eat? So I got into this. My mom actually died of stomach and esophagus cancer. She was on this 90s kick of low fat. And I feel like this low-fat thing that went on in the 90s is what killed my mother. She drank Diet Coke like it was going out of style, all right? She had low-fat. Everything in our house was low-fat. my sister and I were basically raised on what we called mush in our family. That's what I liked. It was graham crackers and milk. Okay? So, it's like looking at this, and I watched my mom suffer through chemotherapy for 11 months before it finally took her life. She went down from like 140 pounds to like 85 or 90 pounds. So, looking back, my dad spent his life savings trying to save her and couldn't do it. And we never knew about this information. We never knew about information like this that could have made a difference in a lot of people's lives. A lot of people's lives. So start reading PubMed. Start getting, all you got to do is go up to the search bar up there, whatever it is, type it in. Look at the studies that are involved with some of this stuff. Look at sucralose. Look at Splenda. Look at these artificial sweeteners. Read what they do in some of these studies. It's fascinating. It really is. So, hopefully I can get back here. All right, so let's go back into this. Low carb, this is basically paleo up here on the top. It's a little bit higher of protein, a little bit higher in carbs, and a little bit less in fat. So again, I'm perfectly fine with low carb, paleo. You don't have to be ketogenic. I'm not trying to push ketogenesis on anybody in here. This will still turn you into a fat mobilizer. And what that is someone who, they go after fats because that's the bulk of their diet, is healthy fats. And so when those healthy fats, when the blood glucose drops and in between meals, I'm going 4, 5, 6 hours in between meals, maybe I'm only having 1 or 2 meals a day that are 1,000, 1,200 calories a piece. You know what I mean? Like, stuff like that is what still makes you a fat mobilizer. And that's what is going to help these insulin problems. It's going to help some of this insulin resistance stuff. I mean, excellent, excellent tool. So the ketogenic diet is just a faster way to speed that process up and really, really, really start mobilizing fat for fuel. Now, I'm going to go into a third way because my wife won't let me get out of here unless I talk about this, but is fasting. So if you guys, I'm just going to touch on this really briefly. If you guys don't know what's happening in the science and research about fasting and what it's doing for people in their lives, research this because this is fascinating. I love study of the Bible, and so the fact that fasting was used in our ancient cultures, not just in the Bible, but in other ancient cultures, and how the benefit they got from it. So, Keto Talk is gonna talk a lot about ketogenesis and ketogenic diets. The other one is called Fasting Talk, all right? You can find these on the podcast app. They're by a guy named Jimmy Moore. If you're not already listening to Jimmy Moore, fascinating stuff. So Fasting Talk and Keto Talk. Keto Talk, all they do is take questions from people. So he sits down and they have a doctor on there, and all they do is filter through questions of people about ketogenic diets. Same thing with fasting. It's with Dr. Jason Fung. He filters through questions about fasting questions from people, and the fasting type is not a diet because you just don't eat anything. So I can't call it a fasting diet. But anyways, so I think that's important to also look into because if you're dealing with autoimmune stuff, if you're dealing with inflammation, if you're dealing with pain and things like that that are from different disorders, ketogenic diet and fasting, man, they work wonders in that area, absolute wonders. So look into the science of that. Every one of these is a different article on that PubMed or something like that PubMed that you can look through and talk about the extreme mental focus they found in studies, the drastic fat mobilization, okay? Significant decrease in inflammation, repairs insulin resistance, the list goes on and on. My sister put my cousin on a low-carb ketogenic diet because he was diagnosed with pre-diabetes or actually like type 2 diabetes, basically. His blood sugars just plummeted. I mean, like, went from like the 200s to the 80s, like within a month. He lost 80 pounds. He never took metformin. I mean, it's just stuff like this that just speaks volumes for this type of tool that we can use in our nutritional approach. All right, precautions of fasting and ketosis. Dropping water from glycogen, we talked about that. Mineral depletion, we talked about that. Muscle cramping, we talked about that. Sleeping less. Okay, so when the higher carb I eat, the more I need to sleep, and the groggier I wake up. And so I challenge you to see if you find the same thing that I found, which is that I can wake up and be alert and crispy in 5 or 10 minutes when I'm eating really low carb. However, when I'm not eating very low carb, it takes me 20 to 30 minutes to wake up. I'm a little bit more groggy. It takes me a little bit more to get around before I'm mentally crispy. So that is part of the sleeping less, okay? So, but the flip side of that is when you balance out those hormones like cortisol and melatonin, I'm falling asleep easier. I track my sleep. I'm a big nerd like that. So now I'm seeing my blocks of deep sleep, or my REM cycles of sleep, have gotten so much deeper and longer in that approach. So that's another benefit. Sweeteners. They will ruin your progress on a low-carb or ketogenic diet. There's a list of them I put on this link. If you click on that link, it's going to take you to all the different sweeteners, and it's going to show you, this is Dr. Adam Nally who did this approach, and he talks a lot about the sweeteners that still stimulate insulin, even though they are not a carbohydrate, have no caloric value. So things like sucralose, Splenda, there's a long list of them, agave nectar, I mean, you can just go into all kinds of stuff. But that's just for this approach right here. You can get a list of those in the article that's behind that if you click on sweeteners, and then also on that one, ruining your keto and fat burning. So the other precaution is your mind is gonna be blown. This is why, because everything got better for me. My biking, my hiking, my running, swimming, you can do all this stuff. My wife and I did the square to square ride the other day, and it was a 30-mile ride. We did it fasted. We were like 16, 18 hours into a fast. Didn't need a gel, a Cliff Bar, nothing. Because when your body is used to burning fat, suddenly you don't need this extra supplementation to get through these endurance workouts or anything like that. So while everybody else is smashing bananas at every stop along the square to square ride, and guess what you're doing in a square to square ride when you're smashing bananas? You have effectively told your body to quit burning fat. Stop burning fat. We've got a banana. That's what it is. That's what you stop mobilizing fat for fuel. We've got glucose. Stop it. We're not burning any more on this ride. So you're gonna go 20 more miles, and guess what you're burning? You're not burning fat, you're burning banana. So that's my point on that. So suddenly, with ketones as a fuel and with fats as a fuel, you're sustained in these activities. Now, for questions on this type of diet mixed with a CrossFit type approach and things like that, I will be more than happy to show you the tricks of the trade on that, because there's a lot of people out there that says you can't do high intensity lifting, you can't do high intensity sports on a ketogenic diet, and that is not accurate. You can. You just have to know how to do it, and have to know how to like biohack the situation. So, not gonna go too much into that. Supplements for general health. So this has nothing to do with a low carb diet. Supplements for general health. MCT oil on the diet part of it will, MCT oil will raise ketones naturally. So they are a derivative of coconut oil. Sells it right back here. The Now brand's the best one. What happens is it gets converted in the body directly into a fuel source, ketones, which happens to stimulate our brain and make us feel really, really good. They're also a really healthy source of fat made from coconuts. So MCT oil, I use it in everything. I cook with it. I put it on everything. I make my little low-carb ice creams with it. I put it in my coffee in the morning. That's what this whole bulletproof coffee thing is all about, is MCT oil and butter. The reason why is, and the reason why it's working and making people feel so good, is because of that ketone production. So when you take in Bulletproof coffee, you have that butter and that MCT oil in the morning, what happens is it also lowers cortisol, also lowers ghrelin and keeps you less hungry throughout the day, and raises leptin. So you're less hungry throughout the day and you've got this performance going on, and that's why people are feeling better drinking this coffee with all this crazy stuff like butter and coconut oil and MCT oil in their coffee. Now, vitamin D. There's an article right here about how 50% of our country are deficient in vitamin D, depending on where we live. I mean, it's just astronomical, the numbers behind this, and how vitamin D is so important to our health. So look at 5,000 units, international units a day, if you can get a supplement like that. Get out in the sun, most important. If you can get naturally from getting out in the sun, you'll save money, A. B, you will feel a ton better at the same time. So, again, let's look at it from a logical standpoint here. We spend so much time indoors. Were we made to be indoors this much? Were we created to be indoors this much? No, we were created to be out there in the sun and have these minerals and vitamins that we store. You know how vitamin D is actually stored in our body? It's stored as a form of cholesterol. It's stored as fat. So without enough healthy fats in your diet, guess what you can't absorb and contain in your body better enough? Vitamin D. You gotta have enough healthy fats to store vitamin D. Vitamin B complex, man, if you're low energy in the morning, get a vitamin B immediately. Like, get it going, because this thing will hype you up and give you energy. Vitamin B complex is really important. Again, I already touched on the magnesium, magnesium glycinate, and magnesium citrate right back here in the corner. There's a ton of different kinds. Vitamin P, I stole this one from my sister. Vitamin P is pleasure, passion, and purpose. My sister made this up, and I've always respected it and thought it was really cool. Get sun, limit blue light exposure. That blue light exposure, so sitting in front of my computer, sitting in front of my tablet, my TV, all this different light that we have in our houses, it suppresses that melatonin. So suddenly, I can't get these deep REM cycles of sleep that I normally would get with this melatonin being higher. So we want to get a little cortisol in the morning again, and then we want to suppress that cortisol and get the melatonin going at night, and that's what's going to help us sleep better, recover faster, if you have better rested sleep, all that, okay? So that comes with limiting blue light as well. If you don't have a blue light filter on your phone, download one. It's real simple on the App Store. Water, get water filters for your home. Limit your household cleaners. Limit your bodily chemicals. Man, this stuff is so important. I see these guys in the gym, the gym I train out of here, and they blow my mind. They do a workout, they get in the shower, and then they spray Axe spray so thick in the air that it makes me want to vomit when I walk through there, because it's like, whoa. I mean, it's so bad, and it's got so many chemicals in it, and they don't realize. These guys are like, I'm after testosterone. You know, half of them do steroids. That's all they want, right? It's testosterone. They don't realize by spraying this stuff all over them, guess what they're suppressing? Their testosterone. The studies confirm it. Look it up. So that's another one. Limit your bodily chemicals. Look what's in your lotions. Look what's in your shampoos. Look what's in your conditioners. Look at what are these things we're putting all over our body. You know, your body is the biggest organ we have. So when we take a shower, every pore in our body gets opened up from this hot shower. And then what do? We rub chemicals all over ourselves. You know, it's like, how do we not figure this out? So we absorb all these chemicals. We also absorb the chlorine and the fluoride that's in the water. So the stuff that they purify our water with to make it drinkable, because it's not safe to drink without it, also enters our body. And studies are confirming that is also what's causing so much hypothyroidism in America with women and things like that. Interesting, you look into it. So the other stuff is work on gut health. Gut health is really important. Get that from our pre and probiotics and enough vegetable consumption. Something else we don't get enough in, like when we talk about the standard American diet. So I want to save a little bit of time for questions. Exercise hard some days, exercise soft some days. This isn't about killing ourselves 5-6 days a week to consider yourself an exercise enthusiast. There's balance in there. Some days it's just nice to take a walk. Some days it's nice to take a soft jog. Some days it's nice to go hit a CrossFit workout and just completely tear the gym down. And sprints and things like that. It's good to find that balance in your workout. So that is all I got for that. Anybody have any questions? Yes, go ahead. So just in the form of Himalayan sea salt or pink salt, Celtic sea salt.
Just put it in your food or whatever?
Yeah, heavily salt your food. I take the pile in the morning. It's about a quarter size in my palm. And I'll just take it with my vitamins, throw it on my tongue, let it sit there for a second, drink it. I know it's rough at first. But you get used to it. And that's one way to start your day with a nice, healthy dose of sodium. And then heavily salt your food throughout the day. Salt it to taste. It'll be fine.
Like they were talking about blood pressure and everything else like that with all that sodium.
If you look into it, the difference that sodium raises blood pressure is fractions of a percent, to where it's so pointless that the doctor, the first thing they tell you would be like, lower sodium, and then exercise and walk and do all these other things, when they should be saying all these other things, and oh yeah, don't drink don't take a bunch of sodium right before you test your blood pressure, because it might skew it by 3 to 5 points. And it's literally that. I mean, if you look in the studies, that's what they're showing on it.
The other thing I have a question for you, you've tried the Bulletproof coffee?
Oh yeah, every day.
We have. We picked up all that. Now I guess here my question is, for sodium, we got the unsalted butter.
Yeah.
But maybe we should get salted butter.
Salted Kerrygold butter.
Then you add a little bit of sodium into that.
Yeah, yep.
But it looks great. We just haven't tried. We have all those parts.
Oh, you'll love it.
Try it tomorrow morning.
You'll love it. It's very thick and satisfying.
Okay.
And the most incredible thing about it is how not hungry you are for like 4 or 5 hours.
That's what they say. We saw somebody on Dr. Rouse was talking about that.
Yeah.
So, okay. I'm excited.
Yes.
What website is that?
MusclesandVeggies.com. So let me go back here. It's MusclesandVeggies.com. And then when you go to that, the very first blog article will be this event. It'll say June 10th.
Okay.
Yeah, click on that blog article, and then it'll say in blue real big, click here, and that'll be the link to this presentation. You guys can look back on it. Things like that. Anybody else? Yes, I do. I also, I do blog posts and videos. I have like all my recipes on there for like, even like a granola recipe, not the lowest carb thing, but like a super healthy granola recipe, ice cream recipes, roasted plantains with almond butter, dark chocolate. I mean, there's just all kinds of stuff on there that I'm trying to get out to people and show that there's really good tasty foods. If you just take the time to prepare them instead of buying something out of a package, you know. That's why I love it, like this store in particular. Like you guys even have like conventional produce. I think
no, everything is 100% USDA organic.
Everything is organic, so it's like that's nice. Yeah. Shameless plug. But no, it's nice to walk into a place and know that every single piece of produce you buy, like I want to make roasted plantains, it's organic. Yes, ma'am.
Do you ever have like a taste for just like a lot of pie or?
Yeah, actually, like just last week, there was a night that I had all these bars like from that were given to me from a conference to like try these bars, a bunch of samples and stuff, and I just went to town and ate like 100 to 150 grams of carbs of just different protein bars and. You know, but they're all good stuff, collagen protein bars, you know what I mean? Like different stuff like that. It's not like it's garbage, but it's not ketogenic low carb by any means. And yeah, I mean, I think that's why that one slide is it talks about there's benefits to cycling back and forth. Absolutely. To stay ketogenic all the time would be like hard and stressful. And I think that it shouldn't be that complicated. Again, it goes back to like, we should be metabolically flexible, so where we can use carbs, we can use fats, we can use proteins, we can use ketones. We should be able to use all these fuel sources and not use too much of carbs, so we can't utilize fats enough, and then we're just hooked on the carbs. And that's where the sugar addiction has come in, and you know, people are just hooked on them. So, yeah, go ahead.
How long should the cycle be?
I personally, I'll just tell you what I do, is 7 to 10 days. Yeah, and that's only from a performance standpoint of cognitively and mentally, I feel the top of my game when I'm in ketosis. And I just, you know, the areas of my life that I want to be really high performance in, and my ministry, and my work, and my family life, and my recreation, that just seems to be the best even playing field for me, that I just feel like $100. You know, it's just the way it is. But other people, it's different. I know that there's a lot of people advocating that, like, every 3 days, basically, cycle in and out. You know, me and you can talk more about, like, CrossFit stuff and how to...
Yeah.
But yeah, every 7 to 10 days, I think, is a good... And, you know, I think for women, they can do it a little sooner, maybe every 5 to 7 days, instead of, I think men can do it a little longer.
Cycle it with what, paleo?
Yeah, cycle it with a sweet potato and some blueberries and, you know, the stuff that you like. You know, and I also think it's about food diversity, too. We all have foods that we really, really like. And here's another thing, I didn't get to touch on this. If you don't have, and this sounds crazy, but if you don't have a blood glucose meter and you're not testing your blood glucose to see how foods react with you, I definitely would advocate that. And that sounds like, oh boy, here he goes, he's going off in left field. But everybody is going to spike blood sugar off different foods. So I may spike really high off of banana, and you may not, and I may spike really low off a cookie, but it may send you through the roof. And that's why we're all different. And so one size fits all just does not work. And so there's a lot of research coming out. Rob Wolf, if you guys don't know him, Rob Wolf wrote The Paleo Solution. He's got a whole thing on just this. He wore a continuous glucose monitor for like 3 months at a time and documented. Then like 5 or 6 other people did. And it was like the foods that they ate, the exact same amounts of carbohydrates, everything affected each one differently. So again, food diversity. Going back to my point was that I feel like we all have foods we like. We should incorporate those foods, you know, every now and then, especially if it's like, I love sweet potato fries. Purple sweet potato fries, which is the yellow on the inside. Oh, amazing. Cut them up, roast them in the oven, and that's my big treat, you know what I mean? I gotta have that at least once a month or so. So I feel like that's important to get in there. Yes, ma'am?
Strips, your analysis, like, are they very accurate?
I don't use ketone strips. I use the Ketonics. The Ketonics is a breath analyzer that you just plug into a USB port. It logs all the data, it tracks everything. It'll tell you what level of ketosis you're in based on the color and the number of clicks it gives you of the light. And then also like a blood meter where you can just prick yourself and it'll give you your blood ketones. You can order them on Amazon. The one I use is called Nova Max, but there's another one called Precision Extra that you can also use and test. The problem with the urine strips, real quick, I know you asked about that, is that at first, the first 2 or 3 weeks that you go into ketosis, those ketone strips, you'll urinate on them, they'll go real high, and you'll be like, I'm in there. Yeah, I'm in there. That's great. But the problem is, situation is that you're peeing out a lot of the ketones because your body hasn't adapted yet to learn how to use them as a fuel source. So you know, you're like, man, I feel pretty good. Like, I feel really good and I'm producing ketones. Even better. You're peeing a lot of them out. So what they found is after about 2 or 3 weeks, the ketone strips won't measure anymore. All of a sudden you're like, hey, I've been eating the same diet and all of a sudden I'm not measuring any ketones anymore in my urine. But I still feel really good. And so people get thrown off by that. And that's because, guess what? You're utilizing the ketones. You're not peeing them out.
You're still producing.
You're utilizing them. You're burning them as fuel. So you're not excreting them in your urine. So that's the only problem with the pee strips.
I'm one of those victims like your mom. That the
low-fat,
the media, and they just don't want to be from the 1980s to 1990s. And I was diagnosed in 98, I guess, with multiple sclerosis, and it they create a constant weather bowl problems that we didn't have teaching career, but then about 3 years ago, I really felt the weakness more so in this way, so it was like I had to start
flared back up a little bit.
Citizen device, so I'm like, I've been hearing that, so that they have the essential pattern, so put the brain and the keto diet.
One thing I was researching last week was about eczema and how the ketogenic diet is like being revolutionary for right now for people who have chronic eczema. And I mean, that stuff like that, it's fascinating that so much of the public doesn't know about these tools that they may be utilized, you know, for specific things like this. So I would love to do some more research on multiple sclerosis and look into what PubMed is.
And then all of a sudden at 6 a.m. you see 63. You just jump 10 points. That's cortisol naturally rising in the morning. That happens with the sun. It happens with a lot of different rhythms. But cortisol naturally rises. It's what wakes us up out of bed. And that cortisol raises our heart rate, raises our blood sugar too as well. So cortisol naturally raises, which we want it to. We want to get up and get moving. And then we want it to taper down the rest of the day. And we want melatonin to rise. So that's, you can kind of, if you Google that process, it'll come up and you'll see exactly what I'm talking about. And then also like ways you can balance that as well. Cortisol is not the enemy, like it's been made out to be this this horrible thing, and it's not.
It's not the stress hormone.
No, it is, don't get me wrong. Like if I almost get in an accident out here, cortisol through the roof. You know what I mean? That's the fight or flight hormone. It's what tells us, well, elevate epinephrine and adrenaline and all these things so we can fight or flight, you know? But it's not this demon. But here's the problem with the stress part. The stress part is if I have chronic stress from my type A Walmart job that I work 50 hours a week in, like I see all my clients, they're stressed to the gills, they're traveling all over the country, all over the world, they're doing this, they're doing that, they never have time. Their stress is always elevated. Why can't I lose body fat? Because stress has a huge role in lowering cortisol and regulating these other hormones like leptin and ghrelin and insulin. And when you can find that balance, a lot of people with my clients, if I can just get them to like take a bath, read a book, put some candles, find your zone where you de-stress a little bit, and a lot of times weight just starts falling off of them. Stress is so huge with that, and that's where it gets a bad rap, is from chronic stress like that.
I just had a question about, it looks like you don't eat much of dairy products with the keto, or am I wrong? Or just
you totally can, if dairy works for you. I didn't include it on here because dairy is a sensitive subject for me because I'm sensitive to it, but that doesn't mean that you may be. So like Jimmy Moore, the guy I was telling you about in Keto Talk, he like makes ice cream out of full heavy whipping cream and just solid fat, you know.
Fat and
it's just like sour cream, and you know, there's a lot of different stuff you can use in a ketogenic diet with dairy that works just fine.
I see your substitute. Yeah, I mean, I can understand coconut oil and things like that, but certain things, it's kind of tough. Yogurt, or, you know, I mean, sometimes cheeses and stuff. I didn't know if that was a no-no. Or not.
No, I mean, it's all about the lactose content, which lactose, anything with an O's on the end of it, glucose, lactose, dextrose, fructose, these are all sugars. That's what the O's is on the end of that. Mm-hmm. These are in the sugar family, and that link up there when I talk about sweeteners and sugars and the different names of sugars goes into all that.
So if you're at grandma's house and she's made her prize winning apple pie, I mean, I kind of know that you don't just eat apple pie every day for the next month, but if you have a piece, it's not going to throw you off too much.
No. And that's where I talked about metabolic flexibility. We should be able to utilize these fuels when we want to, and not be so dogmatic to say. But however, if I have cancer or if I have multiple sclerosis or one of these other things, and this is why I'm doing the diet, then no, Grandma, you love me, right? Because I am on a certain plan to make sure. Like, I have a friend right now whose cholesterol is 400 and just out of this world. His family are the people that love him, and they're like, you're not going to eat with us, you're not going to eat this pie, you're not going to, he's like, my cholesterol is 400, my triglycerides are 500, I'm about to die, you know what I mean? And so I told him, I'm like, tell them, if you love me, you will respect me for not eating this. You don't have to eat, I'm not trying to force you to eat the way I eat, but at least honor that, like, I'm in a bad situation here. And so that would be my only input on that is, if you're doing it for body composition and performance, no, it's not going to kill you to have grandma's special apple pie. In fact, I'm smashing that. You know what I mean? But, it's like if you're on it for a certain goal for that reason, then no, I would stick to the starving cancer plan or whatever that may be.
Can I ask you one more thing?
Yes.
Why does your body get so cold when you're in ketosis?
Actually, I think that's part of, that's a really good question, because I even noticed when I fast that, and I'm a hot-blooded individual, like.
Are you going to the air on like 68?
I turned 80%. Yeah. Yeah, that's interesting, because I'm a hot-blooded individual, and whenever I'm, like, normally, like, when I sleep, and like, get the dog and my wife away from me, because they produce heat, and I produce heat, and we just can't be near each other, but I notice when I'm fasting or whenever I'm, on a lower carb ketogenic side of things, that I am a little colder. And I think it's not that I would say that your metabolism has slowed, because that would say that your metabolic rate has slowed. I don't think that's the case. I think that your body is generating less fuel right here, or less blood flow right here, generating all this digestion, because that's why they tell you not to swim 20 minutes after you eat, because your blood floods this area. So I think the blood flow has something to do with it, maybe, the circulation. I'm gonna research that. That's a really, really good question. I don't know. I've definitely noticed that in our dealings with the low carb side of things, that happens. Go ahead and dress a little warmer. Yes, Martha.
What do you do to combat the dehydration?
Yeah, I think part of that is when you transition into a low-carb diet, you're really dumping water. So after your body has dumped all the water, then it kind of levels out a little bit, and then all of a sudden I don't have to just flood my body with water. But like for me, whenever I go back from, like say I have a carb night, and then I go back into like a more ketotic diet, I start dumping that glycogen and that water that I just stored, and then I get to where I'm like, oh man, like, I just don't, if I don't keep chugging water, I know a headache is coming around the corner. And that's what happens with me, is I get horrible migraine headaches, and that's when I know, look, the slightest tinge of it, I start chugging water, because I know it's coming. But, so I guess my point would be that if you get through that hard part, and kind of sail through that, it levels out and you don't have to have so much water. So it may be that 2 or 3 day process of really getting into a more fat burning, low carb side of things, then it evens out, you don't have to drink quite so much water. But that transition period, you do have to just chug. I mean, And it feels like you're going to the bathroom like literally every 15, 30 minutes. I mean, and it's like, you know you're not dehydrated because it's solidly clear. You know what I mean?
It's weird too because you're having so much salt and you're not retaining any water.
Yeah.
Like there's no
yeah.
retention.
Which is, I think is a benefit because retaining all the water from salt retention when you're eating carbohydrates is a bummer. You know what I mean? To me, it is. Thank you guys very much for having
me. Thank you guys for coming and listening. I hope you guys learned a lot, that you can help yourself be more healthy. If you guys will please, your comments on the seminar evaluation are really